Good afternoon. You are listening to the Andy Sanka Youth Empowerment Program on KDNK Community Radio. This is Around the World with Dylan Forbes. I'm Dylan, and I'll be your host for today's show. Around the World is a podcast that interviews people who are deeply connected to geography, culture, and travel. We aim to share their interests with the community by telling stories and sharing diverse perspectives. I am excited to introduce my guests today, Edward Danahy and Regine Cabrera, who are both social studies teachers in the Roaring Fork Valley. Today, we'll be talking about travel, education, and what it's like growing up in different parts of the world. Let's get started. Please introduce yourselves, where you're from, and tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves. Ms. Regine, could you start us off?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Regine Cabrera. I'm from the Philippines. I am right now a culture exchange teacher with Ross Montessori School. I have 11 years of experience as a teacher teaching in the Philippines. I taught for 2 years in Japan too, and right now teaching middle school.
Nice, that's great. Now, Mr. Danahy, could you tell us a bit about yourself?
My name's Ed Danahy. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado. I've been teaching here in the Roaring Fork Valley for 4 years, though this is the end of my fifth, I believe. I grew up in Denver South High School, and it's funny that you mentioned Japan. I was actually there just about a year ago.
Nice.
Where in Japan were you teaching?
Iwate, northeast Japan.
Oh, I was in Tokyo, and then we went south.
Kyoto.
When we were there, yeah. Kyoto, and then we went to Fukuoka.
Nice.
And then we took a ferry over to Busan.
Ooh, I've never been.
Oh, it was incredible.
Fukuoka, I've been, but that's the most south I've been in Japan. Nice.
That's great. That's really interesting. Now, you guys told us a little bit about where you're from, but could we get a bit more information on that? Maybe tell us about specifically some of your experiences, memories.
Where to start? So I was in the Philippines most of my life. I grew up in Manila, well, south of Manila, in Binyan Laguna, which is a province down south. I grew up there with a big family. My five other siblings were a big family back home. I love the food. I always say I'm very proud to be Filipino. I love the Philippines. I will say that we are the most hardworking, happiest people you'll meet. I don't know, Dylan. Correct me if I'm wrong. But yeah. I can't quite think about what I want to share about it because there's just too much.
Well, what's like your favorite like Filipino food?
Kare kare. It's this like peanut stew. If you've had like Indonesian satay.
Oh, yeah.
It's like that, but it's a stew with like pork or beef or seafood. Have you ever had Filipino food?
I don't think so. I think I've had a little bit, but not enough to be like, I can name a favorite
lumpia
dish.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one of the main things I tried halo halo in Canada, and it was really good. It's
a dessert.
It's a dessert. It has a lot in it. It was
a lot.
I think
halo halo halo, the word means to mix. Mm-hmm. So halo halo means to mix.
mix. Nice. That's perfect. Mr. Danahy, can you tell us a bit about
I'm just from, I hate to say the big city, but I guess the big city in Colorado, right? Nothing compared to Manila, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Pretty urban area. I'm from like downtown proper, went to a big high school. You know, we were talking about it earlier, over 1,000 students. I want to say like 1,500 at least.
Wow.
You know, grew up there my whole life, and then I needed to get out once I graduated. So I moved to Grand Junction, and then I've been progressively getting more and more rural. So now after Grand Junction, when I graduated college, I moved out here to the Roaring Fork Valley.
Nice. Now, home for both of you is kind of a very different meaning and very different distances from here. But I'm sure there's some things that you both miss about home that maybe you don't find as much in the Roaring Fork Valley. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us some about that?
I was home over spring break.
Oh, Nice.
Okay. So that was just like 2 weeks ago, and already I'm missing my nephews and nieces. But aside from that, I think Manila is such a big city. Like what you said when I first landed in Denver, I was like, this is it? So I think just the variety and diversity in Manila in terms of food, what you can buy, the supermarkets, everything and anything I could think of, I can buy in Manila. Mm-hmm. Not here. So I think that's what I miss. I love the Roaring Fork Valley and everything that we have here. But sometimes it just gets too similar.
Yeah, I mean, I'll echo that sentiment. In Denver, there's like anything you could want to do, right? Like you want to go to a rage room. You want to go to Dave and Buster's. You know, you want to go. My favorite place in Denver, it's called the Wizard's Chest. It's like this costume store and there's board games in the basement and like all of like the like fun, crazy stuff and like this crazy dressed up building. And it's like if you want to like go find a board game up here or you want to find like an activity to do, you have to travel for it. So having that diversity and then also like the diversity of like food.
Yep.
Right. It always comes back to food. It's same. Right. Like you get a lot of similarities out here. So in Denver, you're just like I've never
what
been to
do?
Like a Guatemala like a Guatemalan place. Like I'd love to go there and like try it out. And you're never far away from something.
Yep.
Which is nice.
Yeah, exactly. It's just I feel like there's more mellow, laid back atmosphere in the Roaring Fork Valley, which is so nice. I mean, you get to connect to nature. It's definitely more of a smaller community sense.
Which
here.
I like.
I really enjoy that too. But then it's always so nice when you go to even a place like Denver, which isn't like compared to many other cities, it's relatively small.
Yep.
But there's just so much to do, and it just is in some ways more exciting than living in a smaller area. But I think there's definitely pros and cons to both.
Yep.
And now, kind of shifting it a bit, what were some challenges about where you grew up and maybe that you experienced the same things here or maybe you don't, if you can think of any?
Rogine, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
In the United States, we are so like car-centric. Mm-hmm. Even in Denver, right? You want to go somewhere, you basically have to take a car, right? Like even if we want to go to like Target, we have to drive there.
Yep.
What's the experience with like transportation and like is it the same level of challenge in the Philippines?
I was just thinking about that when Dylan asked the question. So here with all the cars, I was so surprised when I got here. I only got here almost two years ago. And what you were saying, it's so car-centric. Back in the Philippines, we have so many modes of transportation. Of course, we have the usual like airplanes and buses, ferries. But we would have like more local options like the jeepneys. I don't know if you're familiar with Filipino jeepneys. They are refurbished war jeepneys from World War II that we turned into public transportation.
Like Willie's Jeeps. Something like that.
I don't know why Willie's cheap.
I think they're repurposed from World War. They're like old American. Gotcha. Yeah.
And then turned into public transportation. And then we'd have like from one street to the other, you can take a tricycle.
Mm-hmm.
So a motorcycle with like a pedicab attached to it. So here, I'm like, okay, I can bike here. But if I wanted to go to like a hiking trail, I wouldn't have any option to go there because of the lack of public transportation.
Right.
I am a big fan of anything public education, public transportation. But speaking of, public transportation, not a problem. I love our jeepneys and our tricycles. But I think one challenge we have is public education. We don't have as many resources as we have here. Like when I take a look at the Roaring Fork High School with your tracks and like your football fields, you have a softball field for everyone. We don't have that. I went to a private Catholic school, but nope, that was a big challenge. I personally did not have that problem. Thank you to my parents, of course, but just in general, you can see students lacking a lot of resources, I would say. Thank God. Again, I didn't get to experience it, but I just wanted to share that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I find it really interesting talking about transportation modes and mm-hmm. stuff, since even in such a rural area where we're surrounded by so much nature, you mm-hmm. still, it's...
You need a car to get there.
You need a car, yeah. I mean, it's more walkable than a lot of yep. areas you'd find in the U.S. and other places as well, but it's still just mm-hmm. very car-oriented, so yep. that was interesting to hear. Do you have any experiences that...
So, like, challenges yeah, with, challenges, like, living in Denver?
Yeah.
You know, I think that the thing that I think of having lived out here is I feel so, like, independent almost. And, like, mm-hmm. I feel like I have much more, like, space to be independent and to be kind of, like, more free. Like, I can just, like, go out hiking and mm-hmm. I'm not stuck in traffic, right? Mm-hmm. Like, being in a city, I felt kind of constrains you, ironically, because I was just talking about how much stuff there is to do. But, like, if you want to do something that's not nearby, you're spending a long time traveling there. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, I think the big thing that people talk about in cities is you just have to be a lot more aware of your surroundings. Mm-hmm. You got to be worried about crime. You know, you got to be worried about, like, locking your stuff up, and you can't leave stuff in your car. And it's like, here, you could walk around and just, like, pull open people's doors and yeah. like, you know, you can, like, people don't lock up their bikes here. That's crazy to me. They just leave them, like, laying on the grass in some places, and in Denver that just wouldn't fly.
I leave my car unlocked with the key inside.
You gotta be, I mean, it's out here, you're more worried about, like, a bear coming yeah. into your car looking yeah. for food rather than a person stealing it.
Yeah.
Right,
exactly. Yeah, it definitely feels more secure, and you kind of just you can walk around with more comfort being here. Like when we were in Denver yesterday, I guess that was. It's just really cool, really fun, but there's just things happening all around. You have to be aware. You definitely can't just have the same laid-back attitude all the time when you're walking around. So that, yeah. Now, I think we're going to shift the conversation a bit towards education, since both of you are teachers in the Roaring Fork Valley, middle school and high school, so definitely differences, but a pretty similar age group in terms. But so I just wonder, as teachers, how do you approach teaching social studies to your students? Like, any differences, similarities that you—
This is so hard, because I have a real social studies teacher here with me.
Oh, I don't know about real. I just gave me a degree. I walked in the wrong
room. Because I really am a graduate of secondary education major in English. So I used to teach really English back in the Philippines and in Japan. But here at Ross, I had to take all the humanities stuff. Last year, I didn't have much of a problem teaching Eastern civilizations, because those I've learned about, like, from... elementary. But when they asked me to teach U.S. history this year, that was my big problem, because I just felt uncomfortable. Like, what business do I have, a Filipino, teaching U.S. history? Well, I do appreciate my school's perspective on it, that I bring in a new perspective into what the U.S. has done in its history. I might not have learned about it throughout my schooling, but I did take a CMC class, wrote papers about it. I really need to prepare myself for it right before my lessons, read about it, make the presentations. But I love reading about, learning about U.S. history, because so much of the U.S. affects the Philippines. I always think of the Philippines as a cousin or a sister to the U.S. So it gives me more of a perspective about, okay, this happened in Philippine history. At the same time, this was happening in U.S. history. So I love, like, not comparing, but looking at the timeline of what things were happening in my part of the world and here too, and how it affects mm-hmm. each other.
Well, I have to be careful about turning this into a history podcast. But in AP US history, right, we talk about, like, American imperialism.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about how we were like, okay, we're going to fight the Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And it was to, you know, liberate Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oops, we took over the Philippines and mm-hmm. we were really brutal over there. So my question is, like, is there any, like, lasting resentment?
Personally, I don't know how to answer that. So this is just me. I don't know how other Filipinos would feel about it. I feel a lot of resentment. That's why I think with Dylan, or especially my group today, I have no qualms about saying how I feel, which teachers are not really supposed to do.
Right.
But I just can't help myself. Mm-hmm. When we talk about Spain, for example, in North and South America, I always say, oh, this is what happened to the Philippines too. Mm-hmm. This is American imperialism. Oh, we are built on the backs of slaves, for example. Did the Philippines have slaves then? No. But still, which again, I have to stop myself sometimes from sharing too much of what I think and just stick with the books. Well, it gets difficult sometimes. Like when we talk about immigration, I have so much to say just because I'm also, quote unquote, an immigrant. So it's really hard.
I 100% agree. I mean, like, teaching U.S. history.
Yeah.
And so to your point, Dylan, like, how do you teach it, right? I try to teach it like it's a story, right? Because, you know, it's one thing to just start saying dates and nobody cares about dates, you know? But if you're like, oh, like, this is drama, right? Like, this dude said this about this dude. And, right? And, like, we have these factions of people building against each other and they're trying to kick everybody's butts, right? Like, I think that's engaging. And so to your point, right, when you're telling the story, you try to make it so that students can build their own ideas. But at the same time, you can't be like, oh, yeah, like, this person was an enslaver and, you know, like, you can explain what they thought, but, you know, you also can't be like, I'm neutral on the subject, right?
Yeah.
You need to be like, this is bad. And that's a difficult line to ride because, you know, you have your own personal beliefs. You have your own political beliefs. I teach a lot about in AP U.S. history. We talk about government programs, right? And we talk about how, like, you know, Lyndon B. Johnson, you know, built this great society in which he was building social programs for people who really needed it, right? And then we talk about how Ronald Reagan basically tore that all down and, you know, he started calling people like welfare queens, right? And started being like really like aggressive towards people who needed welfare. And, you know, how are you supposed to sit there and say like, well, you know, my own personal belief is like, you know, well, you know, did Ronald Reagan have a point? You can't just say like maybe, you know, the facts, the historical knowledge we have is like, no, he really didn't. It was a political play.
Yeah.
And I'm always concerned about being political.
Yeah.
Some days I'm like, oh, I should not have said that.
Exactly.
And then I'm ready for that email where it's like, you said what to my kid? So it's scary. And you have to, I think that maybe more than any other class, you have to be careful about what you say, which I think is kind of, I don't personally like that. I think that teachers are humans, right? You know, we go out and we have lives and we're allowed to have personal beliefs. I don't think we're indoctrinating anybody. I can't even get them to write their name on a paper. You know, why are they going to listen to what I have to say about what I believe?
Now my go-to phrase is when someone asks me a little, something a little too political, I'm like, you can talk to your parents about it just to be safe. But because I know what I believe in. But again, what's the line of the children are curious about what we think about things and the line to indoctrinating them. It's hard. It's so hard.
You know, that's such an interesting topic too. Like, what is indoctrination?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, my doctrine is to teach kids critical thinking skills, right? And so in that sense, like, yeah, like I'm teaching them to be critical of the systems that they might be comfortable with.
Yep.
You know, like whether or not wherever you sit on the political spectrum, I think it should be challenged. And I think that you should be constantly challenged on what you believe. And then that way, when you're challenged and your beliefs hold firm, then you're like, okay, like I have a reason for believing what I believe. I've thought about this.
I think it's also, especially with middle school and high school, they think they know what they know. Does that make sense? But it's, I like challenging them about, oh, they have a belief about the Bill of Rights, for example. And I'm like, okay, why do you believe that? Or is it something that you've just heard? It's not questioning them, but why? So that's why I love teaching social studies.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting talking about just how you're kind of, well, first of all, how we talked about how you present it as a story, try to engage it, so it's not just facts and dates just blindly out there. I mean, that's not very interesting to anybody, but when you're actually trying to engage the students by making it fun, making it interesting, kind of trying to relate it to them, that always makes it just, I feel like that helps learning and just the overall enjoyment of the subject. And then, with talking about how you want to challenge their beliefs and also share your beliefs too, because that's just, I think that's an important thing. You want to, I think they should know kind of that the actual facts, like this was bad, this was good. I mean, and also just challenging their beliefs, which just helps them grow and learn more. Now, keeping with on the education track, I'm curious to know if you could let your students take away one thing, and just one thing, from your social studies lessons, what would that be?
One thing, like at the end of the school year.
Yeah, that would be great.
I wouldn't say it's a specific knowledge point or something. I think the important thing for me is that there's always a reason for something, right? You know, as adults, we always get frustrated with our kids for being like, why? But in reality, like, why is such a great question. And so when I teach like U.S. history or human geography, why are we learning this is the big question. And the answer is because everything has a reason for the way that it is. Mm-hmm. We don't have this wonderful, beautiful society all around the world just by accident, right? You know, the lights don't turn on by accident. So thinking, I think being not necessarily thankful, but aware of their surroundings, aware of their environment and where it comes from. And then also being willing to be like, okay, why? Oh, that's why. That makes sense. Or that doesn't make sense. I should do something about it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Just question everything. I mean, that's how you build a better understanding.
Yeah, why are things the way they are?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I mean, in U.S. history, that's all we do. I'm like, here you are today, right? And then why? why did your parents choose to have you, right? Why are you at Roaring Fork High School? Why does this building exist? You know, and already you get like 50 different branches of history that you can go down, at least for the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just the most simple, what seems like the most simple thing might have a very complex answer, and vice versa. It's just a really interesting topic.
For me, I think, how do I put it? Respect for diversity. I was thinking about the word tolerance earlier, that nowadays I think many people are just tolerant of others. But I think what I want my students to get from me, not just in social studies class, but just having me as a teacher, is that people are different. We have different racial backgrounds. We have different socioeconomic statuses. We have different accents, down to that small, small thing of different accents, for example. Everyone's just different. And like me, I always say, I am very different from other teachers here. We're very similar in many great ways, but we're also very different. How I teach, how I speak, how the food that I eat, the food that I bring for my classes. And it's just being respectful of what you are not, or what you are unfamiliar with, and thinking about them as still equal to you. Like when I shared food, very basic example. There was one kid who came up to me respectfully and was like, "I'm not a fan of Filipino candy." I said, "Great, at least you got to try it." And if they could just have that same outlook towards other things, other people that are different from them, I think we would have a more loving and kind community. Again, like earlier what I said, sometimes the Roaring Fork, Carbondale, as much as I love it, sometimes it feels homogenous. But if other people, other cultures, other food, other languages, others, anything other is always a great thing, I think. which in U.S. history has always been great. We've welcomed so many people mm-hmm. from diverse backgrounds, from diverse countries, and it's all just adding up to the melting pot that is the U.S., which I love about it.
Exactly. And I want to bring up actually an AP Human Geography term that I just kind of reminded me of what you were saying, cultural relativism, like just...
You're doing a great job.
Yeah. I think just really not judging mm-hmm. other cultures, just, okay, maybe this might... I'm not a fan of this, but that's mm-hmm. okay. I respect that. Yeah. I think it's okay that you do that. I totally understand why you do it, but I'm not going to judge you for it or think mm-hmm. differently.
Or think you're less than.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a really good thing for students to take away as well.
And then we get to the tough topic of when does cultural relativism end?
Right? Exactly.
Like when, I need to take your class.
Well, when can we be, when is the appropriate time to be intolerant?
Oh, I love that, because I was talking about a friend, how freedoms here in America mean so differently for freedoms in the Philippines. Like, for example, you take whatever religion you have in mm-hmm. America and you bring it to a tiny, tiny indigenous island in the Philippines, and the indigenous people say, oh, we have our own religion, find someplace else. But here in America, you say, oh, freedom to religion. I love that. I'll talk to you more about it.
That'll be episode 2.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have to all come back. And I mean, we just barely touched on
a
lot of the points that we, yeah, maybe sometime you'll have to come to the high school, take AP Human Geography. I think you'd find that interesting.
And we'll talk about lighter subjects too.
Yeah. Like food. Yeah, definitely.
Or a time in Japan.
I think we've gotten into some deeper conversations. I feel like even just any of these questions that we've talked about, we could easily spend the whole 30 minutes just conversing about. But this has been a really interesting conversation. Now, I think we're kind of drawing to the end of time we have here. But is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know? Maybe any questions or, anything?
I want to say thank you to Katie and Kay. Dylan, who was in my class last year, and my group this year have been loving it. Thank you for this opportunity for our youth, for our kids. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. Thank you so much. And I'm just very, very thankful to be brought here to talk about my favorite subject, me.
I'd like to thank both of you for doing this show. It's been a really interesting conversation. It's been really fun. And I hope sometime we can do this again. And maybe talk about more travel, since that was something we wanted to talk about, but we're kind of running short on time with. But just thank you so much for coming. And anybody who's taking the time to listen to this show, thank you so much. And we'll see you in the next one.
Thank you so much.